UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
Was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 1095. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
Let's not take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the show, everyone, wherever you are listening from tonight. Thank you for joining us. We are heading to Colorado to hear from Stephen and his UFO experiences. Stephen is an avid outdoorsman, spending a lot of time camping and mountain biking the trails of Colorado and the surrounding states. And this has given him the opportunity to have several unusual sightings. But before we get to the Centennial State, we're going to stop off in the Sunshine State of Florida and hear from Molly and her witness submission. If you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show.
Hi there, Nick. This is Molly from Sunshine State of Florida. And I just wanted to give you a shout and offer you a story that I had, a couple of stories about my experiences. And, you know, one of them I'm not sure is a thing, and one of them is absolutely a thing. So we'll start. When I was about 10 or 12 years old, I was living up north, and we were living in a duplex home. I was on the top floor. I was, like I said, 10 or 11 years old. And I woke up and my head was where my feet were, and my feet was where my head was when I had gone to bed. So my feet were essentially on my pillow, and I knew right when I opened my eyes that, and must have been in the middle of the night. I don't know what time it was. I didn't have a clock in the room, or at least I didn't look at it. And when you woke up and I just felt like it was off, like something was off. And I wasn't in the right position. And I sat up and swung my legs around the bed. And because the bed was up against the wall, I knew that no matter where my head was, my feet would be on the floor in the position where would be normal at that point. So even if I woke up in the wrong direction, when my feet hit the floor, I'm now in a normal direction. And then I stood up and I attempted to walk out of the room, but I walked into a wall, and it was almost like everything in my room was not right anymore. Like, and it was pitch black. It was dark. I couldn't, and I had all of my, you know, Tiger Beat posters all over the wall. They were tacked all in a straight line. And I was feeling my way against the wall in front of me, but that wall, trying to feel my way to the hallway so that I could turn on the hallway light. But that wall that was in front of me felt like it had all my posters on it, and that wall should have been to the right of me. So in an odd experience, it was the room wasn't as it should be. And I know, and so I felt around and I was panicking, but moving very quickly because I was afraid. I didn't know where the heck I was. And so I just felt my way, and I somehow felt my way around and to the opposite side of the wall. And then I go blank from there. I'm not sure what happened, but I know that I stood up. I know it wasn't a dream. I know I was in that room. I was opposite. It was a different experience. I was 10 or 11 years old or 11 or 12 years old. So it was just a really bizarre situation. And so that was the end of that story. And I never really thought much about it until I was older. It's funny. I don't think to this day I've shared it with my family. The second situation I was in, I was 20, I'd say 22 maybe, 22, 23. And I was sharing a house with a woman who was 20 years older than me. We became very good friends. And I rented the bottom part of her house, but we had a shared kitchen, shared bathroom, and I just rented the basement. But we had full range of the house. It was essentially where her daughter would be when she came home from school, but she was at college. So I was downstairs in the basement where the wood stove was, and she was upstairs in her room. She was a divorced woman, so it was just her and me in the house. And I was in a double bed, I guess, and went to bed. Everything was normal. And laying there, I woke up out of a sound sleep and I couldn't move. It was what I guess people consider sleep paralysis. But I woke up and my eyes immediately, I was in like a pencil position. My arms were bumping, like a stick straight pencil position. And I'm a really restless sleeper, but I was stick straight pencil, couldn't move. And my friend's name was Fran. And again, it was just her and I in the house. And she was all the way upstairs. So I looked to the doorway and the door was open. And there was a figure about three and a half feet tall standing there. And it was the figure that resembled a gray alien. But to me, it didn't dawn on me that that's what it was. So in my head, all I saw was a figure. There was a shape of a head. I could see no features at all. And it cocked its head. I'm trying to scream my friend's name and I can't move. And her name was Fran, and I just, Fran, like I couldn't move anything. I couldn't move my arms, my legs, my voice box, nothing. And I was absolutely terrified. I was terrified. And this being or this thing that was in front of me cocked its head, and I felt it say to me, and since the beginning, since this happened back when I was 23, whenever I shared this story, I would say, I felt it say to me. And that was the most natural thing, natural way to explain it, because that's exactly what happened. I felt it say to me, "Why are you afraid? I'm not going to hurt you." And with that, right after he said that, I was out. I don't remember a thing. I don't even remember the next day. I don't think I told anybody about that the next day. It wasn't until, I don't know, maybe weeks or months later. It was not the next day, because I just know it wasn't. I know it wasn't. I don't know why I wouldn't tell anybody. It was quite frightening, but I didn't say anything to anybody. So eventually I did tell my friend, and she said, I sort of chalked it up to a ghost. And so I said to my friend, hey, did I ever tell you about that night I saw a ghost? And she told me a story about a little girl that actually died in the house. So for years, when I would share that story, I'd say I saw the little ghost in my room, and it scared the hell out of me and whatever. And then I started listening to people's experiences with aliens. And I said to myself, there has never been, you know, when you compare a ghost situation to an alien situation, it's almost never that the ghost speaks to you by telepathy, but it's almost 100% of the time that the alien speaks to you by telepathy. And that was in my later years. Now I'm 50 almost. Now I truly believe that that was an alien because of its shape. And the more I think about it, the more clear that shape comes to me. Again, no features, but that shape, no hair, no nightgown like the little ghost might wear, or I don't know. But the more I say to myself, it had to be an alien because it spoke to me telepathically. It absolutely did because I felt it say that to me. So another part of the story is when I had a gentleman caller down there in the basement with me, and we were laying in bed and we had fallen asleep, and he was obviously my boyfriend at the time, but I woke up and he was hugging me really tightly. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, you know, whatever, but what is your problem? Right. And, he said, I said, what's the matter with you? And he said, you're not going to believe me, but I just saw something. And I thought, huh, that's weird. So I don't know what was going on in that house, but really pretty interesting stuff. So, you know, I love your show, Nick, and I love that people have the courage to share their stories out there. I think I don't think we need our government. I don't think we need anybody's government on the entire planet to tell us, to validate for us that they're is alien life out there. I think that there probably are, just like people, I think there are good ones and bad ones. And I think, you know, in the end, to just simply use our discernment when dealing or managing different situations relative to experiences, that's the most important thing. You know, people like Travis Walton, I mean, there are so many people that have had some really credible experiences and so much courage to come out. It's emotionally disturbing. It makes you question yourself and everything around you. And my husband says, why are you so interested in aliens? And I said, you know why? I said, because if it really is true, is there anything else on the planet that is more important than that? And you know what? There's not anything. There is nothing more important than beings that are coming down here that control you, control people around you. Some I really feel are light-filled, and some, you know, may have some ulterior motives that aren't so great. But regardless, there's nothing more important. And again, I think it's important that we remember it is so not necessary to be validated by anybody but people who believe in you and people who care about you. And you don't have to be validated by your government. You just move forward in the right direction and you use your intuition. And I'm just really grateful that you put this show on, because it's a tool for people to not feel crazy. And it's a tool for people to connect. And I'm just really grateful for your show, Nick. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Hey, Nick. Thanks for having me.
It is great to have you join us tonight, calling from colorful Colorado.
Beautiful, colorful Colorado. You got it. Not a bad state.
Not a bad state, I hear. I've got plenty of listeners there. I hear it's a beautiful area.
Probably have listeners because everybody's outdoors and seeing these things out here. Typical lifestyle.
And as we said before, that is the best way. Everyone should be outside and looking up.
Pay attention.
Pay attention. Enjoy nature. You're going to be sharing a few UFO sightings, but first you have a sleep paralysis experience you're going to be sharing with us?
I think they all kind of just correlate. Let's guess to start there. It's more of like a reoccurring situation. I would say in my early teens, for about 5 years or so straight through that that tweenager to teens, if that makes sense, it was quite frequent that I would be, well, like textbook sleep paralysis. It's a whole feeling of just being pinned down to your bed. Your mind is awake fully, but your body is completely slammed to the bed. You cannot move. You cannot pick up an arm. You cannot scream. And that was always my intention, was to scream my way out of it, and to push past some kind of gravity that I'm feeling, to just put something out into the world and talk to whatever is happening and into the room. There's always just an omnipresence involved, where you feel like something is in the room. You feel like something is there watching you, with you, feeling on you. And again, you can't open your eyes. You can't do anything about it. It was just a very frequent thing. It would happen weekly, I would say, for years. And then it would subside for a few months, and then it would pop back up and happen again, like another three times in a series over the course of a couple of weeks, and then subside and so on. That pretty much stopped happening after I turned about 20, I'd say, but just kind of textbook sleep paralysis. I don't know if it has anything to do with this subject. My things are more of sighting, but I always think that's weird that other people didn't experience that, because I experience it so frequently. So I guess I started seeing things in the sky. I've had 9, what I would call definitely sightings, definitely more in volume of things that I've seen that are strange, for sure. But when it comes to the actual sightings, about 9. So pretty frequent, to the point where I don't understand why people don't see this consistently. The kind of mark of my lifestyle and what gives me the ability to see these things is I'm a pretty avid outdoorsman. I do a lot of traveling, mountain biking, a lot of in the woods, if that makes sense. I do a lot of action sports like that and such, that basically has me camping out at trailheads in obscure areas alone to wake up in the morning, have coffee, and go for a ride, if that makes sense. So at night, you know, when you got nothing else going on but a fire around you, you're pretty much trained on the stars. I've always been very interested in planetary science, theoretical physics, astrophysics. I've definitely have read a few Hawking books, if that makes sense. And that being said, it kind of puts my face just clearly trained on the sky. So it just happens. I guess the first thing that I had happened was just a sighting back in St. Louis, Missouri. This was about 2009-ish. I was walking out of a store with a friend around 8 o'clock at night, and we're chatting and talking, and I look up, and there is a pretty classic 3-light triangle UFO above us, and it buzzed off almost like a bead. There was no direct flight pattern. It was almost moving around like it was just erratic. And then it flew off to about a mile down the road, hovered over a church for a brief moment, and then shot off into the sky. So she saw it as well. We both kind of, wow, what the heck was that? What was strange about that one, the first one, was the next evening, I was driving down I-70 in St. Peters, Missouri, and I looked to my left, and I see the same object, but it's pacing me. And I'm not in a rural area at this point. This is when I still live back east, you know, on the Mississippi River area. And was just static in the sky, almost pacing my car. I turn around for a brief moment to check the next lane as I'm making lane changes, and it's gone. It took off. So that was number one. Moving into the better stuff, if any of your listeners know where the Maroon Bells are at, it's a park national forest area out in Aspen, Colorado. Beautiful, gorgeous place. And there's a hike out there called the Four Passes Loop, where it's about a 3-4 day hike around this. A friend and I were hiking up. We're going up Willow Pass. We're day one of this. At that night, we're camped out. And the sky, it was a new moon. So you can see everything. You could literally see into the next galaxy, I feel like. It's just lit up. There's not a single ambient light in the sky or anything involved there. No planes going overhead. No, obviously, lights on towers or anything like that. It's just nature, Milky Way, just raging right above you. And we're looking at the sky, and I see this pulsing light that was definitely not blinking. It was a pulse, a whom, whom, but it had no rhythm to it. And it was too far up in the sky to be any type of tower or anything. But the rhythm was, you know, 3 seconds, 17 seconds, 5 seconds, 4 seconds. Again, it just had no rhythm to it whatsoever. We sat there and watched that thing for about 20, 25 minutes, me and my friend Ryan. Just, what the hell is that? What the hell is that? Just kind of baffled, you know, just clueless to what this could be. Suddenly, it, like, the only thing I can say is it powered up, got really, really, really bright. And then within a split second, fired off like a comet, leaving a trail behind it, just out into the atmosphere, gone. we both obviously popped up and jumped out of our skin. It was pretty startling because we're out there in the middle of the woods alone, just him and I don't want to get picked up by these things. I got stuff to do in the morning. So, you know, that being said, we're very startled. Within 60 seconds, within 1 minute, again, you can see everything in the sky. Everything was just completely backlit. Every single star was visible. But we counted 9 conventional jets canvassing the area, coming from all different directions. Within 60 seconds, we counted 9 of these things. What was remarkable is they had no FAA markers, meaning no taillights, you know, no wing lights or anything like that. Nothing blinking on them at all. So what that says to me, and probably to your listeners too, is military. You know, so basically, to kind of unpack what I just said there, we watched a failed intercept happen right above us, just plain as day, craziness. So kind of moving on from there, I had a pretty startling experience. This is the one that I would say kind of put me down the rabbit hole of research into this field. This was back in like 2017. That prior one in Ruin Bells was 2016, so it was a year later. In Fort Collins, Colorado. And I'm looking just out west from me. I was outside. It was about 9 o'clock at night on a Friday night. Sober as a church mouse, no partying or nothing like that. I'm looking at Venus, which was directly to the west of me, just really, really popping. I'm just kind of sitting there doing my normal sky gazing. And then suddenly, over the front range of Colorado, 3 orbs, orange orbs, popped over the front range, right? So if you can imagine just a string of 3 pearls just coming over and following each other, but kind of erratically flying, not around each other, but in the same pattern, but up and down vertically from each other, if that makes sense. So as they come over, they come up from the northwest, they started to head directly south. And as it became east and west parallel with me, the 3 orbs right there with me, one of them in the back, so the final orb, if it's in a line, drops down, descends, and the other 2 keep going south. Within moments, as it almost like touched out of sight underneath the tree line from me, it pops right back up as the other 2 are still heading south and starts coming straight towards me. So at this moment, I'm in a panic because I've experienced sleep paralysis as a child. I've had this sighting before prior. So my first thoughts and the visceral reaction to me was, this is negative. Something's going on here. I need to get out of here. So as every, you know, good Coloradoan operates, you have a carabiner attached to your keys. So I have my keys right on my belt loop. I clacked the fob on my car, jumped into my Nissan, and started it. It's right when I turned the engine over, as this thing's coming towards me, it fires off, heads right south, catches up with the other 2, and they continue at the same pace. So that was quite startling. It doesn't stop there, though. So I'm panicked. I actually just got in the car and went for a drive. You know, life goes on. What's really strange is I went to YouTube that following day, and I found some reports of a very similar sighting that happened in the same night. There was one that was in Switzerland and then one that was in Texas. And it's basically people that are posting videos of these orange orbs in the exact same night that I saw them as well. So I don't know if that correlates or anything like that, if this was just a phenomenon that was just me seeing it, or if this was something that if you were paying attention that night, you probably would have seen something regardless of where you're at. Strange thought, but yeah. So 4 days later, this is where it got a little strange. I am down by the river, and I'm with 2 friends that came up from Denver, okay, which is about an hour and a half south of me. We were sitting down in the river having a beer, just chatting. One friend is pretty open-minded guy. My other friend is a straight hardline skeptic. He does not care what you think. He basically told me I'm an idiot and I saw drones. You know, obviously coming back with, I don't see how a drone could fire off that fast, but that's his opinion. So as I'm explaining this to him, like, I know what I saw. Well, and really, I don't know what I saw, but I can tell you it's not a drone. Right then, my other friend points up in the sky and says, then what the hell is that? And right above us, there was basically like a bowling pin pattern, you know, 1 through 10 pins in a triangle formation flying about 5,000 feet above us. It was pretty big. It didn't take up the entire sky, obviously, but it was definitely large enough to like understand that this is a very big vehicle, you know, relative to how dark it was that evening. And as it flew over us, going fast enough that this whole sighting was about 4 seconds, as it flew over us, if you can know a bowling pin pattern, seven, 10 split. So the 8 and the 9 pin switch spots. So if you can imagine 10 points of light the eighth and the ninth point of light, as it comes over us, flopped and switched spots and then continued to head east. So it was kind of a really validating moment to be discussing what I saw 4 days prior, to be ridiculed for basically thinking that I saw a UFO. And then immediately right then, there's validation. Boom. Then what was that then? So that was kind of a pretty wild one. Moving forward from there, I was in Fort Collins, Colorado. Wait, hold on. Let me back up. I'm trying to do these chronologically for your listeners just to make it more sense. This was this last year, July 4th, which is our Independence Day, Nick. Yay. Sorry about that. We've had to break up with you. So
you're forgiven.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying for jokes. I'm a little nervous here. So July 4th, this last year, 2020, we were camping up in a place called Vedavu, which is in the southeastern portion of Wyoming. Vedavu, from my understanding, is a Native American word that stands for House of the Dancing Spirits, I think is what it is. So the place definitely has some history of strangeness. But anyway, we're up all circled around a campfire. There's about 9 of us, including me. Me being me, my eyes are trained on the sky. Everybody else is having a good time, drinking, talking. I'm obviously drinking and talking, but my eyes are not to my friend's face. They're literally consistently at the sky when I'm out there, when it's that beautiful out. So about to the 10 o'clock, if you're looking at a clock, I saw the pretty much same white orb that I seen when I was in the Maroon Bells back in 2016, start to come up the horizon. But this one was pulsing very similar, but at a rhythm. It would pulse about every 7 seconds. So it wasn't erratic like the one prior. I pointed at that direction, and I say to my friends, everybody shut up and look over here. Everybody looks up, it pulsed. Everybody startles, jumps back, and goes, what was that? I'm like, I don't know, but keep your eyes on it. So as it comes, I guess it was heading south from that point. As it comes over us, it's pulsing. Pulsing, and right when it comes 12 o'clock right above me, it goes womp, 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 3 big pulses, and I jumped out of my chair. I felt an electric shock come from my bottom of my spine up to my head, just like a xylophone, if you can imagine that. Brink, right up your spine. Nobody else had this sensation. I was probably about 4 feet in the air from jumping up. Obviously an exaggeration. I'm not that good at sports. But anyway, jumping up into the sky, and everybody's like, are you okay? Are you okay? It's like, I felt that. So the thing continued on. It just keeping the same rhythm of pulsing as it goes down the horizon until it's gone out of visibility. Naturally, I was pretty startled. So I decided I'm going to go to bed. And again, we're also July 4th, so it's about 1 o'clock in the morning. So we're all pretty tired anyway. So I went to bed. My other friends, about 4 of them stayed up a little bit later. About a half an hour, they explained to me that it did come back. So the point that it went to came back from there, heading back to where it originally started across the sky, as far as directions are concerned. And as it came over, it stopped at about the 10 o'clock again, was static, pulsing in the same rhythm for about a few minutes. And then all of a sudden, 3 little points of light come out of it and start squirreling all around each other. The way they describe this is they're basically dogfighting each other. And that happened for about 5 minutes, and then the 3 points of light went back into the big pulsing point of light, and it just went down to the horizon. So one of the things that your listeners, or excuse me, your guests always bring up, since I've been listening to podcasts since December, is that I think you call it UFO apathy, to where they're not as freaked out as one of the other people's. I've experienced that in this sighting with 8 other people. Nobody saw that to be remarkable. Nobody wanted to talk about it. I'm sitting here jumping out of my chair the next day going, do you guys understand what we saw last night? That thing shocked me. And nobody really kind of seemed to care. They wanted to talk about other things or walk away almost. It's almost like people don't want to face the seen reality that something is going on out there and you're not a part of it. Something is going on out there and you can't control it. And I think that's just kind of part of that UFO apathy, is like people are just terrified and they prefer to not, they prefer to live in that ignorance than face the reality of what we're kind of dealing with right now. Would you agree?
I agree 100%. Yeah. It's
It's easier just to walk back inside or turn a blind eye to it and accept that that is possible.
Well, it's pretty earth-shattering for a lot of people. You know, if you think about it, and I'm sure you have and your listeners have, but, you know, what would happen if something landed on the White House lawn? You know, would we go to work the next day? Would the economy continue? Would there be exchanges of goods and services when our entire paradigm of existence has just shifted to an unknown direction? The answer is probably no. So I think people are just more comfortable just not knowing or caring. And in this case, blatantly ignoring, which blew my mind.
Join me, George Norrie, for the Worldwide Contact in the Desert Virtual UFO Conference, June 25th to June 28th. Contact in the Desert is an epic weekend of adventure jam-packed with exciting explorations into UFOs, ancient civilizations, AI, crop circles, forbidden archaeology, disclosure, and the newest evidence of ongoing contact, sightings, and leading-edge science. This amazing weekend delivers more than 130 presentations and special events showcasing 67 speakers from all over the world, with 2 extra weeks to view your favorite leading experts, including Avi Loeb with Clyde Lewis, Linda Moulton Howe, Paul Hellyer, John Lear, Russell Targ, David Childress, Doc Wallach, and more. With breaking articles in the New York Times and acknowledged naval sightings, and more importantly, the new release of classified documents on the day of the soft opening of Contact in the Desert, we are your source for inside information. Join us June 25th at contactinthedesert.com to get your tickets today. Make contact, contactinthedesert.com.
So, you know, moving forward down the list here, as you can kind of tell, the frequency of these are picking up. So it was a solid year in between, a few years in between, and then over this past year of 2020, I've seen a lot of things. So this was in Moab, Utah. If some of your listeners are familiar with this, really great spot for mountain biking. And again, that's my lifestyle. I built out a truck that I can basically live out of. I have heat back there. I have solar panels. I have everything I possibly need to at least survive out there. So I tend to go on the road solo and try to hit up these like world-renowned mountain bike spots. So basically, I was on top of, I think it's called Long's Canyon, which is right kind of in the corner of Arches National Park, and then which is directly to the east of where I was, and then directly to the south is Canyonlands National Park. If you're familiar with these, if you're ever in the States and out that area, Nikki, beautiful area. It's awe-inspiring for sure. So I'm out here. It's about midnight. I got my camper shell, you know, back window open. And I was just having a cigarette, to be honest with you. Boo on me. And I noticed that there was this orange light that was really extremely prominent up in the sky, right? And this looked like a planet. This looked like, you know, maybe like a really extremely bright star, but it was extremely orange. So that was kind of strange to me. I pulled out my star app, you know, that those pan the sky apps, and I pointed straight at it. Nothing's there. So there's no... You know, how those things work is obviously they coordinate your GPS location, the angle of the phone, and they display the sky with where assumptively the stars are at, just based upon, you know, science and paying attention over years. So there's nothing there. So this thing is not tracked by whatever. So I was like, okay, that's a little strange. And I'd look over to my east where the LaSalle Mountains or mountain range is at. And up in the mountain range, there was another orange pulsing light that was just blinking erratically, nothing at all like rhythmic of it. It would just pulse up and then go down, pulse up and go down. So I'm at this point now, I'm panning the sky, like what the hell is going on? I look to the south towards Canyonlands, and there's 3 points of light that are kind of off of the, like above the horizon enough to not be on the ground, obviously. And I know for a fact that there's no mountain range to the south. It's pretty much a plateau that just is a canyon. Right, that I'm on the top of. So the 3 points of light were moving up and down, side to side, up and down, but they're still in the same like pattern, 1, 2, 3, right? Just going all up and down, side to side, around each other. So It's about midnight. Keep in mind, I'm up here by myself, camped out in the back of my car. I got a shuttle I got to take to ride the whole enchilada, which if any of your listeners are mountain bikers, definitely go do that, at 7 a.m. I'm freaked out. I made the executive decision here to get back in my truck and drive in the town. So I started the truck, packed it up, drove. And as you go into town, you have to go up and then back down and around the canyon to get there. So as I'm going up in a little bit of elevation, I'm looking at the objects in the south again. And as I look over, the two corner lights, you know, 1, 2, 3. So number 1 and 3 are pretty static. The one in the middle is bouncing back and forth between the two, like with speed, with extreme speed. And I've heard this description before, and this was something that David Fravor talked about with his Tic Tac sighting, how it was a ping pong ball in a jar, just that fast, back and forth, as you're just shaking this thing. And yeah, I freaked out. Obviously, I kept going. I drove back down into town and pulled it. And as I pulled into town, this was what was kind of weird. So there's a big strip that goes north and south that goes through the town of Moab. And I couldn't go further south than the beginning of town because there was 7 police cars that were, you know, rear to front, blocking the entire highway, not allowing anybody to go through. It's about a 5-lane road, right? Main drag in town. So you could not head south there for some reason. I don't know if that's anything to do with what I saw towards the south there with the ping pong orb. I thought it was kind of a strange coincidence how, you know, if there's something going on down there and then the police aren't allowing you to go down there, were they called by somebody to block people from going down there? Yeah. So I guess I really only have 2 more that I can speak on. And keep in mind, this has all been this year since the situation going on the 4th of July. This one was literally a month later, about a month after that. I'm sitting out in my car, and obviously we're dealing with the pandemic. There's a lot of stresses going on in the world. There's, when you see stuff this frequently, the question does have to come up is, why me? Why do I see these all the time? And that's when your ego comes to play. Am I special? Is there something going on to where I personally think it's just if you stop and turn the noise off and give yourself the opportunity to actually pay attention, you will see something. It is a highway going on above us. You just got to be attentive enough and patient enough and in the right areas to be able to see this guy, generally speaking. I mean, obviously, if you're in New York City, there's a lot of light pollution in comparative to the maroon bells in Aspen. So, you know, that being said, to your listeners, just shut up, go into the woods and pay attention is the bottom line. You will eventually see something if you're out there as frequently as I am. So this was a moment where this kind of questioned that ego situation. So I'm leaning against my truck. It's about 9 o'clock at night. I'm stressed out. Pandemic's going on. I had a weak moment as I'm staring up into the sky. I just said, just come pick me up. Just come and get me out of here. And right as I said that, the point in the sky that I was staring at, a light goes whoom and pulsed. The same freaking light that I saw in Aspen, the same type of light that I saw in Vedavu on July 4th. It was just a white pulsing light that was not blinking, but pulsing. So that was a moment of, okay, is something listening? Like, did that just react to me and respond? Because, you know, keep in mind, in the past here, these stories I've been telling you, I've had 2 other occasions where something responded to me. You know, A, the situation in front of my house there where the orbs came down and one of them started coming towards me. When I started the car, it jumped off and caught up to the other 2. And then B, me talking about that situation 4 days later. Again, that whole sequence there, that's what put me into this subject. That's when I had to figure out what my opinion is on this. But anyway, just simply talking to the sky and saying, come pick me up, get me out of here. And right at it wasn't within the peripheral, is literally right where I was staring at, wow, pulsed. I couldn't speak on it or what that was. Again, the ego is going to come into play. What makes me special? Why are these things talking to me? I've had people talk to me about like the possibility of like some kind of lineage and your history is inserting UFOs into you because of who you are. And again, I really don't believe that. I'm just an average Joe. I work in marketing. You know, I like to hang out with friends and mountain bike. So I don't really see that being a thing. But that point right there, that did kind of freak me out because, again, it just reacted to what I was doing. Another situation that happened where somebody saw it with me was this past summer as well. I was sitting out on my friend's deck with about 4 friends. It's about I don't know, 10 o'clock at night. We're all having some cocktails. I talking to my friend facing south. He's facing north. We're chatting, and I look up because I see two points of light converging, and they look just like satellites. You know, keep that in mind. Everybody knows what a satellite looks like. It's just got a simple trajectory to it that it maintains. It reflects light that's, you know, not being blocked by the curvature of the Earth. You know, so it's, you get it. You know, that being said, I said, look at that. Those two satellites are about to collide, just kind of joking. As he looked up and I looked up, the one heading like south, J-hooks, accelerates and J-hooks and stops. And as that happened, the one that was heading north shot off into the sky, gone into the atmosphere. So at this point, I'm with a friend and he's screaming, this is the stuff you see all the time. And I'm like, yes, man, this is very validating for me because I can sit here and talk to my face is blue about the things that I've seen, but it doesn't give me any type of validation for this. It's having the opportunity to see this with somebody. This was not a person that practiced that UFO apathy. He was freaked out. He thought that was remarkable. And then moving forward to the last sighting, this happened about a month and a half ago. I live in Northwest Fort Collins, where the Front Range is just directly west of me. I live pretty much close to it and on it. I'm outside my front porch having a cigarette like an idiot again. And I saw a very slow moving, extremely bright light just heading west, just towards the foothills. I tracked it with my eye for a while, and I think I actually sent you a picture of it that I snapped. So I grabbed my binoculars, and if anybody ever knows this trick, I do not have a nice camera, but if you line it up just right, you can put your iPhone camera on your binoculars to amplify it, but it's, you darn well better line it up right then. So it takes a minute. So I ran down the street where there's an open field, and I put the binoculars up on a fence post, pointed at the object as it's heading further west away from me, and I snapped a picture of it as it started to crest over the Front Range, and I did shoot you a picture of that over Instagram if you caught that. And that's pretty much the whole of the things that I've experienced. I never went from A to Z with somebody like this before. So thanks for having the forum to allow me to jump on here and, you know, kind of pour my heart out of the things that just are really the big questions in the world, you know?
Yeah, a lot of interesting sightings there. And, you know, you spend a lot of time outdoors. You know your stars. You know your satellites. You know your planets. You got a lot of dark skies up there, right?
Yeah, absolutely. If you get out into the woods, there's nothing. There's no ambient light pollution, nothing at all. I've seen the Milky Way in its entirety, I feel like, more than other people. And, you know, for you and your listeners, if you don't do that enough, it's a funny way to put it, but it's a really grounding situation to put your face into the sky, to understand that you are very small in the grand scheme of things. This is billions and billions and billions of years of just random colliding particles in motion that have created this compilation of atoms that you stole carbon from other beings and what have you to congeal to who you are today. You're just a part of the system, is what it comes down to. And we forget that. We forget in the monotony of our normal lives that we are part of a bigger picture of just randomness. It's not just you and your politics going on in the state and the things that other humans are doing to other humans, when there's a whole universe that's infinitely vast out there just right in your backyard if you just pay attention to it. So the idea and concept that we are alone out here is flawed, astronomically flawed, because the numbers that we're talking about here, it's basically in the idea of like multiverse. There's so many different possibilities out there. Why wouldn't something be able to bend that space fabric to come here to visit us? And here's a thought for you and your listeners. When you think about humans, you know, we like to covet natural resources, right? We have rare resources, gold, you know, energy, you know, so on and so forth. If you think about that same idea, a natural resource, but on a galactic level, what is the most precious thing out there? And it really comes down to a planet that's in the Goldilocks zone, the planet that's not too cold, a planet that's not too hot, that can actually harbor life, is really what it comes down to, because that's a very rare thing. Obviously, there's studies going on for former life and what have you on Mars, and that's a possibility, and we'll find out when that data comes in. But really talking about like exoplanets, planets that have the ability to just house that life, that have water that's unfrozen and not 3 miles thick. That's a very rare thing. Think about a singular solar system. Compound that over a galactic level. Again, that's the rarest precious commodity out there is the ability to go to a planet that can house that life. So why wouldn't they? Is my point. Do you think there's anything interesting on Europa? You know, is there anything interesting in our solar system on Jupiter? No, it's gas. So why wouldn't they come and explore this? Granted, it's like speaking to ants. I hear that analogy quite often where you don't walk up to an ant pile and think, let me talk to your leader. Because, I mean, if we're talking technology that bends the ability to travel space fabric to create its own localized gravity well to where time itself becomes relative within that gravity well and time speeds up around it, so on and so forth, and all the physics of it, if they have the ability to do that, what do they care about us and our politics, right?
Nail on the head there. You know, like you were saying, you look up at the Milky Way, each one of those stars is a sun, and there's a very good possibility that each one of those suns, like, you know, like our own, have planets orbiting around them. And all it takes is just for one of those planets to harbor life. Like you said, the perfect place.
Yeah, it's that Goldilocks, man. Not too hot porridge, not too cold porridge. Just right. That has the ability.
Another thing to look at is on this planet alone, we have all these type of organisms that live in some really hostile places, you know.
Extremophiles,
you got it. You know, they live around volcanoes, these organisms. So then you got to think, you got to look up and think, well, then there's even more of a possibility that other things are out there in these previously thought uninhabitable zones.
You know, and also kind of consider that life, you know, and to quote Jeff Goldblum from the great movie Jurassic Park, life does find a way, you know, simple. Like it will adapt, it will maneuver. If you think about the environment that a different planet, you know, that's within that same habitable zone can offer, you know, they're not going to look like humans. They're going to look nothing like us. They're not going to breathe the same oxygen mixture that we do. They're not going to be made up the same isotope-like count down to the molecular level, just because that's in a completely different isolated evolution. So consider that, again, just if they can come to that point, let's say we've been in technology for about, 100 and so years, post-industrial revolution. We have enough computing power, you know, in our pockets 10 times over than what we had on the Apollo moon lander back in the 60s. You know, if you take that, you compound that short, because keep in mind, the human existence only been around for 250,000 years. That's how long Homo sapiens have been here. I think it's like 320 or something like that. So take that and compound where we're at right now in that computing, you know, you think about Moore's Law. Moore's Law just basically dictates that computing power will double within a certain frame of time. This has been completely thrown out the window as of like the mid-2000s. It doesn't matter anymore. It's the Pandora's box is open. Point being is slap another 100 years on that when we compound our computing power that gives us the ability to run AI that can solve problems that the human brain can't solve. Why wouldn't we, over a time frame of 1,000 other years, another 2,000, another 50,000 years, solve the big problem, which is interplanetary travel? You know, there's a lot of limitations there. You know, if you think of approaching the speed of light, mass becomes infinite, time becomes relative, right? So you really can't do that Elon Musk rocket style blasting off into the Earth and just trying to head towards a planet. That just doesn't work. You will die. That being said, a lot of talks about, like, I don't know, not to bring up somebody else, but like Bob Lazar, basically you can create your own with this propulsion system. It isn't your average push propulsion system. It simply creates its own gravity well. So if you can create your own gravity, physics itself just becomes relative. You know, time moves differently around you. You know, you're not affected by inertia. You see erratic movements and such. You can go bust a right angle off because it really doesn't matter because the temperature is still the same where you're at. Within this gravity well, nothing is manipulated and it has nothing to do with anything outside of it. So I think that can account for a lot of the erratic patterns of movement that people see out there. It's just, you know, again, that would, if you take a guy in a jet, he's putty. You know, if you break a right angle at those speeds, that guy is smashed up against the wall. He is dead. But again, if you create that relative pocket of gravity within there, none of that really matters. And again, same for speed. You don't really approach the speed of light when you can create your own gravity because you are your own relative place. You're there. You're bending space fabric with your own gravity.
That is exactly what you're seeing with these lights. You know, their behavior, completely erratic, moving all over the place.
It's wild, man. It's a strange world up there. Get your eyes off your feet.
Yeah, just to reiterate, put down your phones.
Yeah.
Go outside, have a look up because there's a lot of amazing things to see up there.
Put down your phones, but keep them handy, Nick, because you might need to take a picture or two of something if you see it.
Yeah, keep your phones handy. Keep following me on Twitter.
You know, I think for your listeners, this is a really important subject that we need to understand, and more data that we can download this raw format. It gives us the ability to kind of make our own decisions. I think for you, you know, advocacy is huge. I've told 1,000 people about this podcast. I discovered it back in December. Anybody that has a single inkling of interest in the subject matter, it's UFO Chronicles. Check them out. Here, I'll send you a link. Because the more people this touches, the better off we are as a society. You know, again, pay attention.
Yeah, I agree that, you know, the more people which come forward, more open-mindedness is needed. And I think it's a really good time as well, especially all the stuff in the news and, you know, which has been coming out. I think it's a very important time. And the more people approach this subject from a different angle, it's imperative.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with you. The more data we got on it, the better we are. For sure. So, you know, kind of like a sidebar, thanks for creating that environment where people can feel comfortable enough to kind of just pour their hearts out about what their relative experiences have been.
And, you know, with all those experiences, you know, we maybe get some answers at least, or at least try to.
Yeah, I think, you know, we are heading into paradigm shift. I feel like I'm waiting for something. I'm not sure if any of your listeners or you had the same, like, just over gravity feeling that something's happening. Something is around the corner, some kind of paradigm shift. Now, whether that be the pandemic that's, you know, been pushing us against the wall here for the past year lifting, or whether that be a great unveiling of, you know, this subject here, but something, because we cannot continue the same course. You know, human beings we're basically going to eradicate ourselves. We don't have the common sense there to not, you know, take the foot off the gas, if that makes sense, so we don't burn our planet up. So something's got to change if we're trying to get past this, you know, 2100 mark, because you're going to see a lot of changes here in the next 50 years regarding environment. There's got to be some kind of technology that can help that. So if something comes out of the sky and helps us with that, angels.
You know, I do agree. I think something is definitely on the horizon. And I know there's a lot of listeners out there which are nodding their heads and thinking the same thing. You know, I think everyone feels, you know, there is something on the way, you know, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
Some definite change is going to happen. And, you know, having been involved in a subject for many years, and I went through quite several years where I just felt, you know, waiting. But now it feels different. Things feel different now.
Yeah. I think it's more of acceptable subject matter. I guess if we had the same engagement 10 years ago, I probably wouldn't be on here, honestly. But I feel like there's been enough disclosure, you know, in the last recent years, that people that would never consider this a subject worth a blink of an eye are actually paying attention to it, because, you know, we have, you know, the Pentagon telling us this now, which is like the highest military authority in the United States. So if you're not listening to that, like, you're one of those people that are just practicing apathy, because you'd rather not face the subject because of what it means to changing your personal life. Look at it for what it is, understand the data, make an educated decision, not just choose to be in ignorance because it's comfortable.
And I've been approached by several people which, you know, initially were very apathetic to the subject. You know, they didn't really care. It was just a joke.
Yeah.
You know, it was just one of those things that you saw on the news and it was just made a mockery of. But now they're converts, you know, they've got interested, you know, they know there's an avenue which needs exploring.
Yeah, it takes a lot to break down a defense mechanism. You know, it's all knee-jerk. You want to laugh at it. You want to play it down. You want to call that guy a kook, you know, what have you. But, you know, these are things, again, to kind of go back to this. Just pay attention. You will see them. If you're in the area to not have an abundance of light pollution and you're out camping, you're out with your family on a boat, wherever you may be relative to what's going on in your life, if you have that opportunity, just sit there and just stare up. Get a recliner. Look up at the sky. Pay attention to movement on it, because if anything, you may just get the wish on some shooting stars, and that's not a bad thing.
You know what you could probably do is you could probably start organizing sky watches. Take a few people with you.
Yeah, I'd like to. I'll be honest with you. My life is so busy. Like, I can barely date. So that being said, like, adding another thing to it on top of the abundance of activities I already do does sound kind of crippling, but I wouldn't mind getting involved into some kind of like local watch group, or to be able to talk about this and have an open forum face to face with people, obviously when the pandemic lifts. I just don't know where to find that. You know, is it a Facebook group? I don't know.
I think these days, that's probably the easiest way. I mean, if you search, it goes to listeners as well, if you search your local area and the Facebook groups, I guarantee it there'll be a local sky watching group. It doesn't necessarily have to be a CE5 group. You know, just be a local sky watching group where you all meet up at a weekend and go out and just sit on chairs and look up.
I mean, if anything, again, you get the wish on some stars. That's quite fine, too.
Well, that is great. It's some great talking to you, Steve.
Yeah, man.
I really appreciate you coming on and sharing that.
Yeah, no, for sure. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to do so.
Take care of yourself, Steve.
You too. Bye-bye.
That is all for this week. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website, ufochroniclespodcast.com. Big thank you to Molly and Stephen for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next week. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.